Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Buckets and Tea NBA show. I'm your host, Katherine Nyker. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode. Today, I have two amazing guests joining me. He's a comedian, friend to the show, host of the Talk From Superheroes podcast. It's Andrew Ivamy. And my second guest, you know him online at Half Good, but he's actually amazing, extraordinary graphic designer, has been doing Raptors game day posters all season long. It's Tristan Douglas. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Doing very well. Doing much better this morning.
I mean, it's a bit of a hangover day. We're recording this on Friday the 29th, right after the Raptors have been officially eliminated from the playoffs by the 76ers. Last week I did this. Usually we do NBA first and then Raptors, but I'm flipping the script this week. Once again, probably the last time this year I do that, where we're going to do Raptors first, and then we're going to talk a bit NBA. And then, as always, I do my Nick Nurse hottie highlight of the week at the end. So, guys, first of all, let's just do like a temperature feelings check in here. How are we doing? I know Andrew just said better this morning. I feel a bit better this morning as well. Tristan, where are you at?
I'm in the good to great range, not because they're out of the playoffs, but just that future outlook is looking bright. So I'm taking, you know, what we got from this series, and I'm just going to package that up into a little ball and just kind of put off to the side. The future is looking so good for this team.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Andrew, you're kind of in a similar headspace.
Yeah, similar headspace where like obviously you're heartbroken in the moment and you know you're up against impossible odds. You're like, can we be a team that makes history by doing what has literally never been done before? And there is that part of your sensible brain that's like, well, that's a very difficult task to do. But then there is a part of your heart that's like, fuck it, we can do anything. Burn it down. We'll take Rome. Like, it is, there is this little voice that gets louder with every success. It's tough in the moment last night. And, you know, you talk about today kind of being like a hangover day. It's only a mild hangover. I woke up this morning just feeling like that was a better season than it had any right to be. I agree with Tristan. All of the pieces look incredible. The future is wildly bright. So we did very impressive things. We did better than anybody expected. I think we did better than anyone involved in the organization expected of it this year. So I feel good.
Yeah, I feel good too. And I have to agree, like I like to think of myself as a fairly level-headed Raptors fan, but over the course of the week, I bought into the propaganda on a level that I usually don't buy into fully. Like I went from last week, I had Lauren Mitchell on the show and we recorded it right after the game 3 loss. And, you know, we were kind of going through it in our own unique way, but then probably by the next day, I was like, when I heard Nick Nurse do his little press conference about like, yeah, we're down 3-0, but if we win one, then it's 3-1. And that has been done before. So why not? And suddenly I was like, yes, we are doing it. We are the team that's going to do this. In my mind, there was a game 7. There were no exceptions. I did not entertain a reality where there wasn't a game 7. I mean, I was really, really in. And then I was like thinking to the future about what the Raptors Heat series face would look like and how heartbreaking that would be. Like, I was just so full into that propaganda. And then that third quarter was a bit of a... I don't even know the words. I just think we forgot. It was almost like we forgot how to play basketball for a solid 5 minutes. I mean, I just don't know how to explain that third quarter, but it happened. You know, reality set in. And now I'm also with you looking on the bright side, but it's been a journey is what I'm saying. It has been a journey.
I would say the moment where I bought into the emotional brain and not rational brain, and I just started getting way too on board in the hype, was, I think, a positive aspect of the turn of this series is seeing American coverage, which typically, you know, a lot of Raptors fans will say has never particularly skewed towards the Raptors, kind of start to buy into the idea that the Raptors could do this as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching like a Heat Atlanta game, and at one point Jeff Van Gundy, the most pessimistic man in the history of basketball, they were talking about the Raptors series, and Jeff was like, well, no team's ever come back from being down 3-0. But I guess if there's one team that could do it, it would be this Raptors team. And he moved on, but there was no underhanded, snide insult. There was nothing. Like, he is a man so pessimistic that if someone was like, is this glass half empty or half full? He'd be like, why isn't the glass running back on defense? And he just said a straight over the plate nice thing. And I could have fainted. That's when I was like, are we actually doing this? That was actually a tide shifting moment for me.
And it had that element of that original We the North thing where it was, if anyone can do it, it's this team, it's this group of people. We're kind of left on this island here to like make history, change the landscape. How could you not get caught up in that? And had we won the game last night, I think the whole city, all of sports landscape would be totally bought in, and Toronto would be partying right now like we celebrated the championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little conspiracy theory on my part, but I really do think that if we won game six, we probably would have won game seven. Like, I just don't believe in the Sixers enough that they would suddenly find themselves in a game seven and get together. Like, I think they knew that if we don't win game six, the series is actually done. Like, I think they know how little or how fragile of a home court they actually have.
Well, that's what they were saying, right?
Game six was game seven.
Yeah. That's what they were saying. Like, they're like, we don't want to go back to Philadelphia to play this game.
No. Yeah, absolutely. That's right. Tobias Harris, I think, said that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely wild. Well, I asked you guys for two key takeaways that you're taking with you from this series. I said it could be completely earnest. It could be silly. It could be whatever you want, however you feel. Andrew, we'll start with you. What are your key takeaways from this series?
I would say, like, my key takeaways from the series is just everyone's looking better. I don't know. I was thinking more of it as a key takeaway for the season, but just every single piece. Like, there is not one person who is worse off at the end of this year than they were at the beginning. Every single person stepped up. You know, Gary maybe was a little bit vulnerable defensively, and obviously they took advantage of that. But you know, he's played better games on defense. I don't feel like this is indicative as to where his performance is going to be permanently. So really just the continued improvement of everyone. And my God, Scottie Barnes, like, just an absolutely incredible performance from a man who obviously we knew have talent, but when it comes to even an incredibly talented, hardworking rookie like that going into, you know, your first playoff series, it is a different energy. It is different pressure. It's a different atmosphere. And it's like, he had been the happy-go-lucky, huggable guy all season, but can you keep that going when Embiid has elbowed three people in the face? Can you still keep smiling and keep that energy and keep that enthusiasm and keep being that guy who we saw all year be legitimately fearless of superstars? You know, the man that we saw be like, I'm going to ISO KD. Like, can he be that guy? And, you know, we lost him for a minute there, but when he was on the court, he was that guy. And that was so impressive to see in playoff basketball.
Yeah, it's that Scottie Barnes. Like, that's one of my biggest takeaways from the series as well, is just seeing the growth of this kid from the start of the season and the projections for where he should be taken in the draft you know, mm-hmm. and him just exceeding every expectation that's been like put ahead of him. My key takeaway from the Scotty Barnes thing is for maybe all of us not to get so caught up in it as we did with Pascal, and
yeah,
that kind of those negative repercussions that come from not living up to these incredibly lofty expectations. But yeah, like what a ride to be on for this entire season. It's just watching this progress all the way through up into the playoffs. But my main takeaway, I think, from this season may be just for next season, finding a balance, more so in terms of minutes played. We missed Fred in this series. Like a healthy, healthy Fred Van Vliet, I think, makes this series completely different for the Raptors, and we get out of this first round easily. But those first game especially saw him. He's just hobbled, and you can argue that we wouldn't be in this position if Fred didn't play all those minutes. But having a little bit more balance, so you can extend, you know, Fred VanVleet and his legs. Because if we made it to say the second round, third round, what does he look like in those later rounds? So yeah, I think maybe for next season, maybe just tweaking the balance a little bit more, maybe getting Delano or Malachi just a little bit extra run, so they're more involved all season long instead of just those last, you know, 4 minutes in a game type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the minutes distribution conversation I find really interesting, and it's something we've touched on throughout the season, because I've kind of been on both sides of it, because I feel like on one hand, of course, like you need your top guys available when it matters most. But there was also this part of me that was like, I appreciate having the bar really high and being like, if you're not hitting this bar, you're just not getting minutes. And I think in like a quote unquote rebuild year, it's a very unique rebuild year being fifth in the East. But in a quote unquote rebuild year, it's like you also need that. So I think like I will lean more on the side of like, you need to get, like you said, Malachi and Delano Banton more minutes and more reps in for their growth to be more worthwhile. Or if you're like, hey, this isn't it, then maybe it's just getting them enough minutes to increase their trade value. Yeah, that's where I kind of lean. But I there was a part of me, you know, earlier this season when I did not have a fifth in the East aspiration, that I was like, yeah, let's keep that bar high. Let's see if any of these guys hit that bar. And I don't think anybody knew we would be fifth in the East, is what I'm really saying. I just don't think even the Raptors knew.
I couldn't agree more with that, but I don't think that warrants the minutes, but I do agree with that. Because like,
it's very hot takey of me, I know.
I've been... I do agree with that, but here's my perspective on the minutes, is that I think in either direction, even with what you're saying, Catherine, I still can't figure out the justification for the minutes, because it's like Nurse isn't a Thibodeau coach where it's like, we're going to put the pedal on the gas till the engine catches on fire and see how far we got. That's not his coaching style. So I'm like, if we are A, pushing to do better than anyone expected, then we still need rested guys. And B, if we're in a rebuild and developing, then the new guys need more reps. And I get that Nick has always been this, you need to earn that time, you need to earn those reps, and has maybe been a little bit hard and quick on like pulling people's time or how little or more you're getting. But I think that is rough on the young guns, because then the thing that Nick likes seeing from, you know, the new and rotational players coming in or coming off the bench is going to be just solid team basketball, fundamental defense. But when you get 1 minute out there to impress, you're doing stupid, idiotic plays, yeah, because you're trying to get a wildly impressive highlight to get you that one extra minute next game. So it is antithetical to the exact style of basketball Nick wants to see from these guys. So I think that, and there were some games this season where it's like, we're up by 20 or we're down by 20 and there's 2 minutes left and Fred and Pascal are still in. And I'm like, why are we doing this? And I get that there were some games where they had a lot of minutes, and those small unexpected wins add up to that unexpected fifth place, and we'll take it. But there were times where it's like, there's no reason to keep fighting this game and keep wearing out our guys, especially when, you know, we as the fans were probably the last to know about all of Fred's like issues when it comes to hip, knee, soreness, tightness. But it's like, they knew that. Why weren't we easing up on the gas pedal way sooner?
Yeah, exactly. When he started looking, you know, 10 years older than he currently is out on the court and just barely making it up and down, maybe just tweak him a little bit. But Catherine, kind of on the same page as you as well, earlier this season, my outlook on this team was different. I had different thoughts about what we should be doing at the trade deadline and, you know, et cetera. But I will say, even with the minutes, that's a very minor gripe I have in a overall, like, very positive season, because you look at people like Chris Boucher and Precious, their growth even this season. So maybe they know something that obviously I don't when it comes to like the Delano and the Malachi minutes, because maybe next year they make that leap, or they have some sort of development tool that they're going to be pulling out of the bag, and they'll make us right now seem like, oh, well, why did we worry about Delano and Malachi? They're, you know, they're playing 25, 30 minutes a game next season. So yeah, it's always a caveat when it comes to those minutes thing, because the Raptors are such a good development team. And that's kind of been their reputation for the last decade.
No, it's true. I think the only thing I disagree with is I do think Nick Nurse is becoming more and more like Tibbs, because he does look like he's about to have a heart attack every game. Yeah. So there is something about Nick Nurse that is leaning a little more into Tibbs territory. But anyway, I just have to throw in a little jab there. I think, okay, for me, my two key takeaways that I interpreted it as for the series, not necessarily for the entire season. One, I think this might be a controversial opinion. It's valuable to lose in the playoffs. That is how I feel. It is valuable to lose in the playoffs. And I say that because more times than not, pretty much, no, I'm going to say every time a team wins a championship, they have been through losing in the playoffs before. And yes, there's some players on this team from the 2019 championship year, but let's be real, it's a whole new team. And every guy that was on that championship team has a new role. So it's like they need to go through those growing pains now. And for somebody like Scottie Barnes to go through that in his first year is so valuable. Like, I've been really enjoying the Memphis-Minnesota series. It's been, outside of the Raptors, it's been one of my favorite series to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, Karl Anthony Towns, like, people have been really hard on him for making mistakes and for this team. They blew a 20-point lead twice in one game. And it's like, even though it's like his 10th year in the league, he doesn't have those playoff reps. And so you're seeing it now, even though he is at a stage in his career where you would think he would be better at this, but he hasn't had that experience. So it's like, to have, for Scottie to have that in year one, to me, is so, so valuable. So I'm not like mad that we lost the series, even though I bought into so much propaganda. That's my first hot take. My second takeaway is I feel like a lot of people say it without really saying it, and I'm just gonna go there. Joel Embiid is a deeply insecure man.
I agree. A lot of people say it. I've never heard someone say it as clinically and just punch to the chest like that. I respect it. I'm not going to disagree in any way, but I do agree. I've never heard it said quite like that.
That was a proclamation.
Yeah.
Straight shot. Oh God.
I mean, he just is. Like, I just don't, like, he just, even in the way he carries himself, it's like, he carries himself like you know, I was going back and forth on Twitter with my friend Ryan Dillon, and I was like, Joel Embiid is like a Marvel villain, but also like a teenage girl waiting for a text from a boy at the same time. Like, he is just both of those things 24/7.
Well, oh no, you go ahead, Tristan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if that's maybe a symptom of, you know, what happened to him and his team previously when they faced the Raptors in the playoffs as well. And it's more of that overcompensating every small little thing to, you know, just show off a little bit more, just to kind of rub it in the Raptors' faces. I also would agree that maybe the Sixers organization as a whole is a little bit insecure.
Yeah.
Just in general, which you can.
Yeah, their culture doesn't exude confidence.
No. Yeah. And even this past week, like, you know, thankfully, you know, for Doc Rivers, he got this win last night just to put all those reports like to rest. And you'd say that, you know, when he maybe gets swept next round, like, he can blame this team in a couple years. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of things you can fall back on that have been, you know, a real positive memory. Even the process itself, you know, you can see how that ended last year with the whole team and organization blaming Ben Simmons. So, yeah, but I would say Joel Embiid, that's a very accurate and hot, not even hot take, just a straight take at him.
Yeah, I agree. Not a hot take, straight take. Yes. Yes. And I agree with the organization, the process, with the Simmons and everything. It's hard to be a comfortably, quietly confident man in Philly. No matter who you are, it is hard to be a quietly confident person in Philly. But I do like that it does a little bit contradict one thing you were saying a minute ago, Catherine, and I think hilariously so. And I was thinking it. As you were saying, you were like, playoff losses are important and you learn something and you grow.
Yeah.
And as you were saying that, I'm like, I 100% agree, except for Joel Embiid. Because just him doing the plane last night, I'm like, you little shit. To be like, you're doing a thing that you literally did when you got way too cocky, way too confident, and then you learned in your playoff run, because like when you're talking about like, you know, Cat and like blowing a 20-point lead and shit like that, it's like, well, you learn, then you get those reps in, you're like, oh, in playoff basketball, it's actually, we don't beat the opponent into submission. They actually keep fighting every second of the game. It's not a regular season game where we get up 20 and then we can just play slow paced clock eating basketball. It's not that. And I feel like Embiid, when he lost to us, it was like, okay, here it is. You know, you're crying. Gasol's being really nice to you. You got cocky. You showboated. You were humbled. You learned your hubris. You've learned a lesson in humility. And then this series comes. It was like, oh, no, you didn't. You didn't learn anything from that playoff. No, you didn't. You didn't learn anything from your playoff loss. You're the exact same guy.
You're absolutely right. And I think the funniest thing for me about the little airplane move that he did last night is that even last night, he didn't do it with the same amount of confidence and veracity as he did the first time.
It was a very weak, uncomfortable play move.
Yeah, he tried it and then kind of like,
seaplane.
Yeah. It's like an unconfident dancer. Like, you know, when like professional dancers, it's like arms like really far out, you know, like fingers. It's like you feel it at the tips of their fingers. And he's just like, little plane. Yeah, I mean, look, Andrew, I'm really happy you brought that up and contradicting everything I just said. No, but it's a really good point.
2%. Like, it is the exception to the rule. I agree with what you said. And I think that it is the exception to the rule of what you said.
But I completely agree. And I think, it just goes back to what we're saying about like Sixers culture. That isn't a moment where you rise above the next year, because they didn't have a good showing in the bubble the year after. And then the year after that, we saw the whole breakdown against the Hawks. And now this year, even though they're moving on to the second round, and we're going to get into it later. We're going to do a bit of Eastern Conference playoff previews later. I like, I'm not confident in this team against the Sixers. So I'm going to hold back my picks because I don't want to jump the subject. But like, yeah, like, yeah, it's a confidence thing. And like, also too, like, he made a bit of an obscene gesture for some reason, never got fined, but it was all over Twitter. And as I watched that, I was just like, this guy is just undateable. Just completely undateable. Come on. Who's going to, I mean, look, he has money. People are going to date Joel Embiid, but I'm just like, come on, man.
Yeah.
I'm not dating Joel Embiid. I'll say that for all his millions of dollars, I will turn a date down. I mean, maybe the one NBA player I turn a date down from. No one's asking, just for the record. No one's asking.
But... I thought you'd go through your list. The second half of the show is just all the list of all the people.
All the guys. God, I wish. That'd be a great list. They're all retired now, too. Like, it's from so long ago.
Yeah, to truncate it, there are two lists. There are NBA players Catherine wouldn't date, and it's just Joel Embiid. And then there's NBA players Catherine would date, and it just says NBA players on that list. Just to get them all.
Just the entire history of anyone who's ever participated in the league.
Yeah.
If Dr. J calls, no.
I don't blame you. It's the other thing about like this this series, and for the Raptors going home a little bit earlier than, you know, we got a little bit hyped up, maybe a little bit earlier than we thought. This playoff round, the series doesn't have the sting. It doesn't have the stigma that, you know, previous Raptors teams, when they've been eliminated from the playoffs, that we've experienced there. We're coming out of this, all three of us right now, coming out of this series pretty positive about this team. There isn't this, like, you know, these two players don't work well together, or like, you know, we could have done this in the series differently. It's a completely different mindset that all Raptors fans currently have, at least as far as I've seen. So I think if there is one thing to take away from this series, is that we're in a different spot. We are not the teams of the past.
Yeah.
As we've kind of said already, this is a rebuild year. And I think even the most, even the high expectations, I think we've either met those or already passed them in 1 year, considering where we were a year ago.
Absolutely. Okay, I asked you guys to answer this question. I said, imagine you are either a player, a coach, or part of MLSE. What's one thing you would have done differently? And let's start with you.
I mean, I'll double down on the reduced minutes for our stars earlier. For sure, reduced minutes, because get the new guys reps, whether we're keeping them or not, get them reps, you know, increase their, at least increase their value as an asset. So definitely reduced minutes for our all-stars is another one. And I would say that, like, if we are, and it's hard to say organizationally where we were kind of mid-season in terms of like, well, are we actually going to surprisingly get the fifth seed and make some kind of a push? But I would have pushed maybe for some kind of a traditional big pickup and free agency, just to get, even if it is a past their prime vet, someone to come in and bang around for a few minutes. I mean, I like Thad. He's still like a little bit smaller than maybe we could have used, but like a calming vet presence on the court definitely was very beneficial. So I liked having Thad around, but I would have liked to search around for a vet big, just to get that calming presence, bang around, even if it's coming off the bench. We start with the 6-9 experiment, and then for certain matchups, certain teams, just have someone to come in and just kind of neutralize a threat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my big change.
Absolutely, I love it. Tristan, how about you?
Yeah, I completely agree with the traditional big, but I think from, you know, the start of the series to the end, my opinion, again, as I said, has changed a little bit, especially considering like, the role players. My biggest takeaway, and this shouldn't be a surprise, if I'm part of MLSE, just trust Bobby and Masai. Just trust them to be doing the right thing. because there was questions from the very beginning of the season when it came to our draft pick, to how Precious was looking, how Boucher was looking. You know, there was immediate calls saying, do we really need either of these players on this team right now? And especially after the All-Star break, Precious was just lights out from three for the most part. So I think really kind of leaning into this vision right now, I think that's got to be, if I'm part of MLSC, if I'm in the head office, if I'm even just like the water person on the side of the bench, trusting this version of the Raptors and where we can go from here. Obviously, there are minor tweaks we can make, the minutes again being the big one. Maybe finding a proper Fred VanVleet backup, which again kind of bleeds into the minutes conversation as well. But yeah, what they're currently doing, I just say lean in, maybe get someone over 7 foot just to be that presence when you're really going against like the more.
Hey, I'll settle for 6'11". I will settle for 6'11".
Sure, but
a thick 6'11" though.
Yeah, exactly. A real bulky 6'11". It takes a couple extra seconds to get up and down the court.
Yes.
So yeah, like I think that's really the main thing is to just lean into this vision. This is year one of many years of having hopefully this core together. So yeah, just enjoy that ride.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. My answer for this is significantly sillier. It's about the t-shirts. Next year, we need better t-shirts. We need t-shirts that stand out.
Yes.
They need to be white. They need to be a bright red or a bright purple. We need that swarming energy. Maybe Tristan, hey, maybe you can design them. You know what I mean? Like, let's push for that. That would be absolutely amazing. We got to do better by the t-shirts. Also, like, I don't know, you know, I want MLSC to team up somebody. I don't know who. Somebody. Some stupid tech genius. And we need an app to detect real fans from fake fans. That is some scary Black Mirror shit I just pitched on the show.
But me and Andrew are still just like, yeah, all right. Yeah,
no, 100%.
Yeah, we all need microchips implanted in the real fans. Yeah,
but
human being, I'm like, I don't trust Facebook anymore. I haven't used it in 4 years. But I'm like, yeah, put the chips in that can tell who's a real fan or not. Yeah, no, inject that right into my blood, Zuckerberg. I'm fine with that one.
Look, we need
I'm good with.
We need something. We need something. And I get, you know, rich people go to these games and maybe MLSC doesn't want to lose these rich people. Okay. Like, I understand, but maybe with the app, we can just spread them out more. Okay. So they're not all front center. And then it's completely empty at the top of the third. You know what I mean? Like if we sprinkle them out, then maybe it won't feel as empty in very key pockets of the arena where we need people like the entire lower bowl. Just saying.
It's interesting because I think what you're kind of maybe inadvertently recommending is the Raptors just move back to the Rogers Center. And so you can... So you have the court right in the middle there and you have, you know, your $5 Shoppers Drug Mart tickets up on the 500 levels come with a pair of binoculars and, you know, everyone can go to the game that way.
That is definitely a solution. I love that it's like, rather than you went a more like, let's scale it up. Let's avoid the microchips. Let's avoid the Big Brother. Let's just scale it up a little bit because you need a 500s for real fans now because exactly. Even the 300s have become so unaffordable.
Yeah,
the 300s aren't even guaranteed real fans anymore because it was a time when it was like, well, 300s is guaranteed some real fans in the 300s. Yes. But me and Catherine were at game three and on the subject of the fans, the ticket cost and the shirts, it was like, first of all, it's like, I agree with Gavin. The shirts aren't great. We need red or purple, 100%. We need something that pops, something that makes us look more like a unit as fans. Also, people need to put the fucking shirts on. put the goddamn shirt on.
Yeah, everybody's showing up to the game in such nice clothes that they don't want to put the free shirt over their nice fits.
We were in the 300s. That's an issue. And there were several guys in full suits. Like, full suits. I'm legit. Like, this is the 300s. No one's impressed that you're here. You need to be into the game or get out. This isn't the impressive corporate seat that you fit. What are we doing here?
Actually, Andrew, I forgot to tell you that this happened when we went to the game. So where we were sitting is I was more like in with like other people. And I think Andrew was more like at the aisle. So there were like a group of guys sitting next to me. Two groups of guys. So these two guys kept coming in and out of the game. And then they left the game mid fourth quarter and never came back, which is wild. It's like, why are you even here? Then the group next to them, he kept filming himself when we were chanting, "Let's go Raptors." So it's like, it was like the fourth quarter and we're like really trying to rally this team on. And then he filmed himself for chanting, "Let's go Raptors." And at one point I like stood up and like cheered for the team and they actually pointed and laughed at me for cheering. No joke. And it like legit like attempt at bullying me for cheering. And I was like, wait, you're the weird one though. You know what I mean? Like I had to actively avoid making eye contact because I didn't want to like inflame them.
Yeah.
But that is like what they were doing. And it just like made me more angry. Also, there was a girl in front of me. This is, I promise you, I'm not lying. Second quarter, was checking her phone, was watching a video of Johnny Depp on trial. Like an Entertainment Tonight recap clip of Johnny Depp on trial.
I'm not going to play that during the game.
It is game three. What is wrong with you?
She's looking for the Chromecast option to put it on the Jumbotron. Like, can I get it up there?
What's
the Wi-Fi code?
What is the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, the three rows around us were there for the gram. So you know what? If I'm for MLSE, we need to do something to lower the goddamn ticket prices or make sure that it doesn't turn into Leafs games. Like, I don't want it to be a thing that is inaccessible to the general public. I do not want that in any way. And I think over the past several years, it's become that. And you can also like hear the difference in the audience even when you're watching it on TV. And I just don't want it to fully get there. And it's inching its way. And it's sad to see.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to become a complete pessimist, but I just feel like, you know, people keep talking about the series that we lost to the Cavs, that game six, or everybody was chanting, "Let's go Raptors," when LeBron was trying to do like his little interview on the air. And he was like, "Do you hear this crowd? Blah, blah, blah." A part of me fears like those days might be gone. That we'll just never get a crowd like that in the stadium again for a game like that. I'm not sure. I mean, I hope I'm wrong about that, but
I have another idea.
Love it. Oh my God. Love it.
I mean, the original thought was let's just add a level to Scotiabank, like a 600. But my real idea is maybe Toronto needs a second basketball team. Like, they obviously need a WNBA team.
I was 100%. Just about to say, yeah.
Like, that needs to happen, period.
You know, I'm all over that, yeah.
But maybe they need another NBA team.
You know what? I mean, so great. I was also thinking, like, maybe we need the Maple Leafs to be good again. To make the Raptors the less popular choice. So all the people that are there for the gram and blah, blah, blah would rather spend the money on like Leafs tickets than Raptors tickets. And we could just like, you know, just like shove them over a little.
So you're saying the Leafs need to win the Stanley Cup this year. And then anyone who kind of.
All these people will be gone. Yeah. They're not going to a Raptors game again because it's not about basketball for them.
I get that.
It's about doing it for the gram. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if the Leafs win, then they're all over those Leafs tickets. They're already, I hear, expensive. I've actually never been to a Leafs game. But it's just, let's just, you know.
And while all of those fans have now jumped back over to the Leafs, us real fans get a little microchip And then
I love it. Let's go Leafs. Let's go microchips. Let's do it, baby.
Yeah. Oh my God. I can't believe that's our solution. But that's where we're at as Raptors fans. It's just where we're at. I love it. Guys, we're going a little long, but I'm okay with that if you're okay with that. But if we got to skip topics, then that's okay. We're good?
Yeah, I'm in no rush.
All good.
Love it. Okay, let's keep going. I just wanted to make note of one more thing before we moved on to NBA. And that is this, what I think will now be an infamous Doc Rivers press conference. going on about, you know, before game six, being like, hey guys, you need to tell the real story when it comes to me. Okay. That Orlando team was in eighth seed. And that was the Detroit Pistons that went on to win the championship. Tracy McGrady was on that Orlando Magic team. It was not that terrible of a team. Like, I just think, like, him just, like, exercising all the demons in this press conference instead of just being like, well, hey, like, we got to win game six, and that's what I'm focused on right now, is really wild to me. I mean, it's just proof, you know, more proof, not that we needed proof, but more proof that, like, all these guys are paying attention to what we're saying. Everybody knows the narrative that surrounds them. I don't know. I want to know what you think. I want to know if you feel bad for Doc or not. Like, I think this narrative, I don't think game six killed it. Like, I think this is going to go on into the next series and the next series. Like, I think this is going to continue to chase him as a coach and his career until maybe he wins another championship, honestly. But Tristan, we'll start with you. What did you think of this press conference?
My original thought was kind of shocked that a coach would be so blatant about
his team
how
sucking.
Awful the teams he coached were. Like, that was my first initial, like, whoa, like an NBA coach just tossing team after team after team under the bus. And then after a little bit, I thought about it. And I thought, oh, this is the same coach that was saying directly after their team got eliminated from the playoffs, I don't think Ben Simmons is going to be, you can't ask me if he's going to be a star point guard on this team, and basically throwing Ben Simmons under the bus as well. And so it kind of falls in line with how he talks about teammates, or sorry, not teammates, his players, his past teams. It all kind of just fits. And I didn't feel bad for him when he said those comments this week because of how the Ben Simmons thing started directly after they got eliminated last year. And obviously, speaking today after they won, I feel absolutely no feelings about it. I'm like, you did it. Congratulations. Move on. Go face the Heat. So, I wasn't really taken back by it. I was very unsurprised.
Yeah, I mean, and just to finish off what he said, so first he threw that Orlando Magic team under the bus, and then he's like, and then that Clippers team, like Chris Paul was playing on one leg, this, that, and the other, and then that other series, well, that was in the bubble, and that was me, blah, blah, blah. I hate when people use the bubble as an excuse, because I'm like, you were all in the bubble. Like, stop acting like you were in the bubble and the opponent wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that just drives me crazy. But anyway, those are the three years that he referenced. Anyways, Andrew, what did you think of that?
I mean, my immediate thing when I was watching that clip was, and, you know, obviously this is my own hubris in retrospect, but I was like, oh, we're taking game six. Like, I was like, oh, so we got that. Because, you know, talking earlier about the Embiid thing, to be like, you are an unconfident man. Like, that is not something that you do when you are confident. And like, and I understand, like, we all have in our jobs, our personal life, our relationships, we all have some fuck ups in the past that we are maybe a little bit defensive about, but on confident days, we don't feel the need to be defensive about it. It is when our back is against the ropes and like things have gone bad all week. Like if I'm doing stand-up shows and I have like five great nights of shows And, you know, both of you were like, Andrew, you kind of suck as a stand up. I'd be like, yeah, go to hell. I'm not sweating that. But if I bombed four nights in a row and you said that, I'd be like, okay, listen here. Here's what I have done. Here are the good shows. That... So it's like that. That's when I know that things are going wrong for me. So when he had that reaction, I was like, oh, we're taking game six because you're floundering. Like he wouldn't have had that reaction asked that after game three. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's just in your confident moment. You're like, I don't need to explain my past mistakes. But when you are in the process of making a mistake, you feel the need to explain your past mistakes, you know?
Yeah, God, it just, like, I just feel like it only made things worse.
Oh, yeah.
Like, almost like when Will and Jada, like, when Jada had that affair, and then they were like, I know what we're going to do. We're going to talk about it on Red Table Talk and refer to it as an entanglement, and that'll make it all better. And then it just became a million times worse.
But it was, again, like this week, it was Doc Rivers talking about blaming his past teams. It was Embiid blaming Harden for not being himself or not being the point guard that they needed. And it was just like this round table of, well, it's your fault and it's also his fault for where we are now. So, yeah, like it was just this crumbling team.
So that's just Philly culture, Trish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. That's what motivated them to get going again.
It is a team that bullies you into doing your best. And that doesn't work on every team. And it obviously, like looking at the game six performance, it kind of worked with Harden. Doc did make coaching adjustments. Like bullying you into the best version of you is something that I think is a pretty shitty practice in life, but somehow it functions in Philadelphia. Like, that is just the one place where it works.
Yeah. I mean, the crowd booing the Sixers in game five and hearing that on TV, just this is.
And
what
also,
you
like,
do?
Like, cheering when Thybulle was like leaving the game. Like, yeah. Whoa. Like even like if somebody like Precious Achiuwa was really struggling, like we wouldn't be like cheering him off the floor. Like, that's so wild.
Okay. I have a question for both of you then. For the Raptors in Scotiabank Arena, would you rather have the people wearing three-piece suits populating all of the 500 level for Instagram, or a whole group of fans that will boo your team off the floor for, you know, the slightest thing?
Do the fans who boo you, follow-up question, do the booing fans... do they still show up when the team is on a losing streak? Are the seats still filled?
It's take the Sixers game five as an example, where people are like, we're out of here as soon as it gets to that like 5-6 minute mark.
Then I'm choosing suits.
Okay.
I'm choosing booing if you're there all the time. If you're there through the suck, first minute, last minute, that's at least a passionate fandom. You're lunatics, but you're passionate if you stick through the whole thing. All right. You can't. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm choosing suits in that scenario.
I'm going to go with booze because I think you need something to feed off of, and booing would at least give you something like as stand up. I mean, I haven't been booed as a comedian, but like sometimes you go to shows that are very poorly produced and they're in a bar and the bar doesn't know a comedy show is about to happen. And no one's there for a comedy show. And then you try to take the mic and you start talking to people who don't want to be talked to. And it's like having people not pay attention to you, I feel, is worse. I don't know that for a fact because I haven't been booed, but I feel it's worse. Because if someone booed me as a comedian, I could at least engage with them and potentially like put them in their place. They could also potentially put me in my place. So it's a bit of a scary situation, but at least, you know, we're engaged. Where like if the suits are just like doing their own thing, it's like, I'm an advertising exec and this is my latest spin on like toothpaste, you know, like during the game, then it's like, no one's paying attention to you. You can't feed off of that.
I do like the idea of someone pitching a new brand of toothpaste in the 500 levels of a Raptors game.
I feel like it's happened. I just feel like that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, I
what if the smile is bigger?
Huh? Catherine, save it for Dragon's Den. Don't give away all your secrets here. Microchips, bigger smiles on Tuesdays. I think I agree with both of you. Having a reaction is better than not having a reaction. That being said, I think at some point during the season, the Raptors didn't have fans and they were playing out of their minds in an empty Scotiabank Arena. So the comparison can maybe be drawn there, where a room full of people not paying attention may be the same as not having anyone there at all.
I love this spontaneous question. Thank you very much. I also enjoy how much it says about our current state as Raptors fans. This is a question we would even entertain. It was a bit of a therapy session after all.
Yeah. We're just playing Would You Rather.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Would you rather the team bench be church pews or our mascot is sick that day? Which would you? Just nonsense hypotheticals, but it's fun. Yeah. The Raptor has thrown up inside of the costume. Players can smell it, but it is not that distracting. But they know it's in there. They're all looking at each other.
There and they're is like, a swooshing and swirling.
And everyone's giving each other a nod of like, we know that he threw up in there. But no one's drawing attention to it.
All right, Catherine, you first.
Guys, no. We're gonna move on. But I promise you, if you're both interested, this could be a deep August episode, this entire topic. 100%. Because I'm going to do some fun off-season episodes. And this absolutely could be one of them. Okay, let's move on to some NBA. I mean, we're already talking Sixers, so we might as well stick with them. It's Miami. It's Philly. It's round two. It starts Monday. What do we think this series is going to be like, and who do we think is going to come out on top? Tristan, let's start with you.
Not only because the Sixers just beat the Raptors, I just think Miami in general is just a better team, like through and through. So I'm picking the Heat, and I'm going to be rooting for Kyle Lowry to just continue on his little path to the finals. The matchups, I think, are going to be a little bit tighter for the Sixers, who just had an issue with having a bunch of, you know, almost 7 feet players, 7 foot tall players. The Heat can match up in a whole bunch of different varieties as well. And, you know, time and time again this season, they've proved that, yeah, we're the best team in the East, where I think the Sixers are now maybe still kind of recovering a little bit mentally from this whole series. And they're definitely going to be recovering physically from it. There are games where Embiid looked gassed before a halftime. So if the series, if Bam can keep Embiid just running up and down the court and making him work for all the shots, I think the Sixers will be in trouble a lot quicker than they were against the Raptors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Andrew, what are you thinking?
I pretty much agree with Tristan on that one, is that I think the Sixers are in trouble. Like, emotionally, obviously, I'm rooting for the Heat in this series. But also, practically, like, I'm not a gambling man, but I would bet on the Heat in this series. Just because Embiid is already banged up a little bit. So he's going to have that problem kind of going into the series. And on top of that, Adebayo is just more athletically gifted, is just to have better cardio and can bang around for longer and tire him out. And as we saw during this series, if you are just a pest to Embiid, if you go at him, and, you know, it's not even this series, it's been, you know, the past several years of Embiid's career. I think a lot of teams have figured this out, that it's just the man doesn't have the stamina to keep giving it in the third and fourth quarter if you go at him hard off the top. You know, if he gets a friendly whistle in the first half, then that can be a problem. But you go at him physically, you exhaust him, you tire him out, you make him run and space the court, and especially with the spacing Miami has as well, like, it is just going and their speed and transition. Like, I think it's just going to be a problem. I think Embiid's going to be gassed. I don't think Harden can be old Harden for that long. I think Maxey might be able to keep up his performance that he has had going on. But for the most part, I think Miami's going to come out pretty clean.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of like, yeah, like it's emotional, but also just very logical. I think this team is better. Also, like, I mean, I was pretty impressed with them being able to close out the series against the Hawks without Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry. That was pretty wild. I think, you know, I mean, Embiid is still going to be the biggest guy on the court, but I mean, Bam Adebayo is a fierce defender. And I think this team is just a lot faster and they have a lot more offensive options. Kyle is injured and I don't have a status update on him currently as we're recording. So I don't know if he's going to be available for game one or not. But I think even without Kyle, I'm picking the Heat in this. I don't know if it's because I'm emotional off of last night. I want to call it a sweep.
I was thinking the same thing.
I want to call it a sweep, but it might just be that I'm just high off of this Raptors series and I have no confidence in the 76ers at all. And also, you love to see it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you love to see it. I might just, you know what? Fuck it. Maybe I will just call it a sweep. Bold move. I was going to say maybe like Heat in six. That's probably the more logical pick. I mean, especially if Lowry's out of game and, you know, I don't know. I mean, to me, their offense didn't look like it was a real misstep. They'd have played enough games without Lowry this season to know how to win without him. Not to say he's a non-factor or anything, but I just mean like against a better team, I'd be more worried without Lowry, but against this team, I'm not worried.
And even if Lowry comes back at half health, like a half health Kyle still makes a huge impact, which is something that we saw for years, just because his half court offense and playmaking, like he's doing just high above the break, up above the break playmaking. And it's just creating movement. It's creating spacing. It's a threat. Like there are times where like Kyle can have a 0 point game with a plus minus of 10. Like how the hell does that? And it is just a threat and he's not showing his weaknesses. He's not limping up and down the court. Even when he is half health, he is smartly just staying around half court, just keeping things calm, cool and collected. So if he does come back, or when, I guess I should say, when he comes back into the series, even a half health Lowry is going to make a huge impact against Philly.
And I think we're also, they may not have Kyle Lowry on the court, but they have Coach Lowry off on the sidelines. Even if he's not playing, he's a part of that team and he's going to be giving directions, what he thinks. Like we saw it with the Raptors for years. He's, with him on the sidelines, you've got that leadership regardless of what he's doing. Even in those games where he's not scoring that well, that impact he has, I think, is going to be the difference. And again, I also think that the Heat will wrap this up. I was going to say five games if I'm being analytical about it.
But, I'm with Tristan on five.
Yeah. Like I want to say four. I want to just like lean into it, but I'll give them one. Maybe the Sixers fans boo the Sixers enough that they pick up a win in Philadelphia. But yeah, I think, like you said, Catherine, they've played without their stars in and out of the lineup like so often this season. They've got it figured out. Much like the Raptors playing their starters, 39, 40 minutes a game led them to the playoffs. I think they already have a plan going into the Sixers and for the rest of the playoffs. Guys in and out of the lineup doesn't make a whole world of difference to what inevitably will be the outcome of the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think for me, my NBA bracket is already so fucked that I'm not winning anything I ever entered with any of my friends at this point. Like I thought it was going to be Boston in seven. I actually was foolish enough to pick Utah in six, but I was thrown by the Luka injury. So I'm just gonna throw caution to the wind and say Miami's gonna sweep this baby, and hopefully I'm not so wrong that the Sixers take it. That's how I feel about it. Let's move on to another Eastern Conference series that I am actually completely perplexed about. I don't know how to call this series at all. I'm very intrigued by it. It's the Bucks versus the Celtics. Chris Middleton has been ruled out for this series. Huge. Absolutely massive. I'm a big believer in the Bucks, but the Celtics have really surprised me. And they're damn good. And I don't know how to call this series at all. I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to see if either one of you can sway me. Andrew, let's start with you. Do you have any insights on this series at all?
I mean, if I'm making one bet on this series, it's like if any game in all of the NBA playoffs this year go to seven, it's this series. Like, yeah. I honestly could flip a coin on either one. Like, I agree with you. I believe in Milwaukee. But Boston's momentum and just upward swing has been unearthly, just godly. Like, it is kind of intimidating to even watch. So I don't know how to process that information, because there's part of me that's like, this is unseemly, but is this sustainable? Because it doesn't seem like it, because it's such a huge swing. So I don't know if they keep this momentum going, there's no stopping Boston. But I feel like if there's a falter in their step, or if there's blood in the water at all, then Milwaukee really, really, really takes it and starts swinging heavy.
I think it's going to really depend on how quickly Bud can make adjustments in Milwaukee.
I laugh because we know how long it takes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's really going to be dependent on him recognizing what the Celtics can do and making adjustments to cut off Tatum or Brown or Marcus Smart. Peyton Pritchard comes out of the woodwork every so often and, you know, can light up a Raptors team easily. But I think it's going to be really dependent on the coaching, especially with Middleton out. Giannis will be able to get his, I think, pretty easily, because that's just how dominant Giannis is. But like you said, the Celtics are just, you know, they're surging right now. They ended the season surging. They went into the playoffs, surprising, I think, everyone by sweeping the Nets. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics kind of easily wrap up the Bucks series.
Yeah.
With Middleton out.
I agree. You know, obviously, like, you know, Giannis is the best player in the series. He's going to still get his. But you're looking at the rest of that roster and asking yourself, can they make up for the 20-plus points a game that collectively that Chris Middleton would have against the Celtics defense for four games? And I don't know if they can. But it feels weird to bet against, you know, the reigning champs here. And I don't know. I mean, maybe I think, this is a bit of a cop-out answer, but how I realistically think it's going to go is it's either going to be Boston in six or Milwaukee in seven. If it goes to a game seven, Milwaukee has the home court advantage. And I think if they get to a game seven, then they've figured themselves out enough, right, to know how to make up for Chris Middleton not being there. And I think they can take a game seven if they can get there. But if they can't get there, then I think Boston wraps it up in six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Boston comes out of this maybe in six. I would say like that's a very like number I can wrap my head around. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's going to be if Milwaukee figures it out that Pat Connaughton can give you 15 and well, I don't even know who else is running around with them. If Holiday can be like the offensive threat that they need, I think, yeah, the Bucks could easily roll through it with that clicking for them.
And Holiday has been, but whether he can do it consistently is the
issue. That's the thing.
And you saying like having the defending champs be kind of such maybe underdogs in this series, it actually popped in my head again that, oh yeah, the Bucks are the defending champs.
I know, you forget. It's weird with the Bucks. It's like it's easy to forget they're the defending champs somehow.
Yeah, because it's just not talked about. It's just kind of, you still think that maybe it's the Lakers from 2 years ago that just kind of carried over.
They might be a more disrespected champion than the Raptors are, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to get to. It's just like, I don't think we've had a team since the Raptors be so forgotten about after winning a championship.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, that's my expert analysis on that series. I didn't send it to you guys last night, but we do have another series wrapped up here, and that's Phoenix versus Dallas in the West. The Dallas Mavericks came through last night. I don't know if you guys caught that game, but the end of that game was absolutely wild. Utah absolutely had a chance to win that game,
yeah,
and they blew it. Mm-hmm. Mike Conley had he traveled in the paint with seconds left in this game. Just like what I think is a very uncharacteristic turnover for him. But I've been hearing that he's had a really tough year this year. I don't watch enough Jazz games to know that. But and then, you know, Quinn Snyder draws up an ideal play. I don't think I've ever seen a more wide open shot to win a game, especially in the playoffs, like maybe ever. And it gets bricked. And then that's the whole season. It was an absolutely wild finish. I'm not high on the Mavericks. That might be controversial. I know some people are really, really big on this Mavericks team. I'm just not.
Well, to talk about like just for a second that like Dallas Utah game the other night, you're right, that was a perfect play drawn up, it was wide open. I don't know what was going on those last 2 minutes for Utah, because that was a wide open shot and it was missed, but also they could have went for the tie to push it to overtime. It was an open three for the win from your best three-point shooter, so why not? But also, if you look at that play, he's got 4 seconds left and a straight line to the bucket. You could have went for the easy, confident overtime. And like, you know, a buzzer beating three, sure, it's impressive. It ends it. You go home, you get a little bit more rest. But in that scenario, I was like, just do a layup, walk it in. I was furious in that moment to be like, you take guaranteed OT over a buzzer beating three, even if it's wide open. But that's just my, and also like the last 2 minutes of the game, Utah, you know, down by one at times, we're just walking it up the court, and within 4 seconds of the shot clock, heaving up a contested deep three, not even running plays. So I'm like, you threw away the last 2 minutes of this game doing no plays. Then you got yourself the best play off of the inbound and did nothing with that. Was so frustrating. But I'm also not high on Dallas. I think that Luka is just going to completely demolish his own body before.
One thing I'll say about Utah, their fans were on their feet for pretty much the entire fourth quarter of that game.
Respect to that.
And they are not known for having the best fans in the league.
Yeah.
It really puts the Raptors thing into perspective. Sorry, Tristan, what are your initial thoughts on this?
No, I completely agree with that play. And Andrew, your analysis of that, just go in for a layup, get a foul, try to draw something instead of, you know, that kind of heroic last shot, which I completely understand, because as a kid in the driveway, it's always that kind of moment you're kind of building towards, being like, this shot for the win. And even when I was a kid, just bricking it constantly. But yeah, I think a slight audible on that, and we're kind of looking at a different series, different outcome. That being said, the Jazz next year, I think, are going to look very different.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone's saying. Yeah,
they can't. That's not sustainable, keeping this team around. In terms of Luka in the Mavericks, I'm excited for where this team can find themselves, whether it is, you know, the Western Conference Finals or the Finals. You know, that would be a big shock, but this Mavericks team, I don't know, there's something about them that I could see maybe squeaking their way through at least into the third round.
Whoa. So you think they'll upset here? You think they'll beat the Suns?
Nah. there's a chance that it happens. And I would only say that with Booker being out for the Suns.
He's back.
He's back now?
He's back.
Well, then maybe I'll take back what I said. I didn't realize he was coming back immediately for the second round.
Yeah, he played last night. I don't remember what his numbers were, but he did. I think he played like 30 minutes.
Oh, so he's like back.
He's okay. Back.
He
might not be 100%, but he's playing.
Rewind like 5 minutes, and what I said about the Mavericks making out of the second round is now null.
Oh, okay.
I think now I'm fully now on Andrew's side, is that Luka will just do anything he possibly can to will this Mavericks team pass the Suns, and it will not be enough.
Right.
I can admit to my own mistakes there.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
I do agree that no matter what happens at the end of that series, we will all be like, wow, Luka dug down and did every possible humanly capable thing that he could do to win. And like, he doesn't care about life or limb. He will die doing it. Like earlier when I used the metaphor of like putting your foot on the gas until the engine catches on fire. That is Luka, to his own detriment as well. Like, I do think that like long-term, his play style is like concerning, and like you'd need a coach and support staff to be like, pump the brakes every now and then. Maybe you don't need to play the last game of the season, Luka. Like, you know, he does need, I think, people to tell him to slow it down, but it is impressive how much he absolutely gives and just puts in. But I still think Suns in 5 or 6. Like, Mavs will get one, but I think Suns in maybe 6.
I'll give them 6. Why not? You know what I mean? Like, I'll say they'll win 2 games. I'm gonna say Suns in 6. I agree. Like, Luka's gonna have like a big, at least one massive Luka game, if not 2. He's gonna do everything he can. For me, it's really just I'm not as big of a believer in the rest of that team as other people are, and that's fine. I will say this: I think it'll be really fun. I think it's going to be entertaining to watch. Like, I think they're going to be putting up a good fight. I think these games are going to be close. You know, I don't think it's going to be like constant blowouts or anything. I had the Suns winning it all, but now I'm really leaning more towards the Warriors because I didn't know how healthy Steph Curry was going to be. And I love watching that team this year. Call me biased. It's fine. This is not an expert analysis on my part at all, but I'm just going to say Suns in 6. Yeah.
I'm on board with that.
Cool. Well, guys, that brings us to our Nick Nurse hottie highlight of the week. Maybe not Nick's best week. but not his worst. My favorite part from last night after the Raptors were eliminated, in his post-game press conference, he just said that Philly was really great in 3 games this series. And I love that so much. I'm not a big, like, oh, like, it's petty and I'm here for it person. Like, I just feel like everybody who says that all the time, it's like, I don't know who you were before that became a thing. I don't know what your personality was. I don't know what ever made you laugh before that was a saying, because it's all you ever say now. That's just so many people on Twitter. But when Nick Nurse did it in that post game press conference, I really was that this is petty and I'm here for it person. Like, I really was like, this is excellent, excellent, excellent from Nick Nurse. I absolutely loved that. It does kind of make you think like, man, if we do take that game 3, it's all very different. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Let me know what you think, guys.
I think it was the perfect amount of shade. I love it. Like, that is my favorite kind of petty, is petty that happens so lightning fast you don't realize it until one sentence later. Like, you don't even have an option. Like, granted, I know he's not talking to anyone. Like, you know, it is media availability, but it, like, no one would have time for a comeback, that level of petty. And that's what I really love, where like, I think I lost the couple sentences he said afterwards, because I was like, wait a minute, did he say three games? Did he? Oh, okay. That's good. That's good.
I also have no idea what he said immediately after. Yeah.
You want an insult where you black out for a couple of sentences. That's the level of petty that I'm really on board for. So I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. I think Nurse has had like so many good moments throughout this series, whether it's like kind of being like dropping cliches in the, you know, if someone's going to be down 3-0, why not us? And yeah, this comment is something that you would read about and you see it in print and you're like, oh man, like, that's a deep one there on this team. I think it's a very, very Nick Nurse quote.
Yeah, I just like to not do the whole respect your opponent thing immediately after getting eliminated is so fun to me because it was this opponent.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've already gone on about long enough. But just the fact that he did that, it was a real chef's kiss kind of moment. So well done, Nick. I have to say, just as maybe like a bit of a programming note, as the Raptors go deep into the offseason, sometimes there's a whole week where Nick Nurse just isn't in the public eye. I don't have a Nick Nurse hottie highlight of the week every week in the offseason. I just want people to know that. If he does make any sort of public appearance, I make a note of it. Sometimes I'll ask guests what their favorite Nick Nurse moment is. Maybe he'll just have a quote of the week that has nothing to do with Nurse. I don't know. But I try to end every episode on a fun note. As he leans more and more into his celebrity, who knows? Maybe he'll make more cameos on Canadian television. Maybe I'll try to write him into a TV show someday. I'm working on it. But until then, guys, this has been a fantastic episode. Thank you so much for joining me. And honestly, what a great Raptor season we all got to enjoy. Andrew, let's start with you. Let us know what you're up to and where people can find you on the internet.
Well, what I'm up to is, if you are listening to this and you're also a movie fan and a nerdy person, I co-host a podcast called Talk From Superheroes, where every week myself and my co-host, we discuss a piece of superhero television or film. So when this comes out, this is next week, the new Doctor Strange movie comes out. So the Monday after we'll have an episode about that, where we just kind of dissect, goof, have a little fun. It's kind of equal parts film analysis and equal parts just fucking around. But it's a fun time, and we love talking about nerdy shit. So if you're into nerdy stuff, go check that out. And I also, that's Talk From Superheroes, wherever you're listening to this. And I also run the website fromsuperheroes.com, which is all nerdy comedy. So we've got like our webcomic Texts From Superheroes. So if you've ever seen that shared online, it looks like a screen cap of superheroes text messaging one another. That's kind of our joke format. We've got webcomics, other podcasts at fromsuperheroes.com. That's my network. Or you can reach out to me at Ivamey, Ivamey.
Absolutely love it. Tristan, we're going to miss your game day posters. I enjoyed them so much. Also, for people listening, Freddie Rivas and I co-host a WNBA podcast called The Pickup, and Tristan did the art for our WNBA pod, which we absolutely love. Tristan, let us know what you're up to and where people can find you on the internet.
Well, what I'm up to now that the Raptors are, done for the season is relaxing. Just a little bit.
You've earned it.
Yeah, 82 game day posters and then a handful of the playoff posters has kind of, got me in my Fred Van Vliet kind of feeling where like my hand is cramping and like I'm moving a little bit slower now. But you can see all of the posters from this season, all 82 games, didn't miss one, even had an extra poster for the canceled Chicago Bulls game in December.
Yeah, that's right.
So not to brag, 83 out of 82. you can find all of those at halfgood_. That's where all the posters are. And I'll be posting some new basketball stuff for the next little bit, thinking about getting back into some animation. So maybe some more rotoscopes of iconic Raptors moments from this year. So yeah, I'm going to be just kind of focusing into that and also planning on what next year's posters look like. Maybe not all 82 games, maybe a weekly recap type of thing, but anything to save my hand.
84 next year.
Oh, 84. God.
You shot 101% this year.
Look, I think like Sportsnet, I mean, I've loved your collaboration with Sportsnet. Congrats on that.
Thank you so
they
much.
They got to buy you out full. So hey, you do all the Sportsnet games.
I'm a free agent right now, so I'm waiting for someone to pick me up on a full-time contract. That being said, 82 is a lot, so you'll have to be a little bit of negotiation there, I think.
For sure. I mean, you know, kudos to you. I don't know how to draw anything. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at @itsme_Catherine. That's where you'll see any upcoming shows or anything like that I've got going on. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I'll be covering the rest of the NBA playoffs every week, and probably the draft and probably free agency. And like I said, there'll be some fun off-season content as well. So this show isn't going to slow down. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.